So I'd love to start off with just talking about the format that they shot the film on, which is VistaVision.
Yeah, that was one of the points that I had kind of written down. It's the first feature length film since Mary Poppins to be shot entirely on VistaVision. And yeah, like you said, Hitchcock used it for To Catch a Thief and North by Northwest. White Christmas was the first ever film shot on VistaVision. And yeah, what's really unique about that is that was sort of one of the original large formats that you could shoot on. And you could kind of compare it to like 70 millimeter IMAX today, where they use, you know, the length of the frame and pull it through the camera differently. So it gets a really wide field of view, and it just captures such a detailed and luscious image.
Like, if you think about VistaVision, it's just some of the most epic looking, beautiful films you can think of. Like you mentioned, some Hitchcock, Vertigo, North by Northwest, St. Louis Blues, War and Peace, The Searchers.
Yeah, absolutely.
But beyond that, what else can people expect from this film?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of set it up perfectly of like the most epic film that you can think of. I saw it back in October at the Chicago Film Festival, and there hasn't been a day where I haven't thought about the film. Just the way that it's constructed, it's a 3.5 hour film, sort of just separated into two parts. The way that he's kind of described it is he approached it as brutalism itself, and the first half of the film is very minimalistic. The character of Laszlo Toth, who Adrian Brody plays, is really going through these extremely nuanced situations as he arrives in America, fleeing Hungary post-World War II, and he meets this financier played by Guy Pearce, who hires him to create this sort of community center outside of Philadelphia. And then you're going through this in the first act, the first half of the film, and it's just sort of suddenly stopped by this intermission. The second half of the film, Brady Corbet just unleashes the weight of the entire story in the last like hour and a half, and it just washes over you in a really remarkable way.
I've loved Brady Corbet for a long time, not only with his directing work like The Childhood of a Leader and Simon Killer, but also as an actor. I remember being really affected by his performance in Mysterious Skin, and one of the most horrifying performances I've ever seen in Funny Games. And of course, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, and beyond. So I'm really excited about what he's doing now and seeing how he's grown as a filmmaker.
Another sort of unique thing about it is his relationship with his wife. Creatively, they co-wrote this film. They write a lot of their films together. She's also a director. Mona Fassfald is her name. I've listened to a lot of different interviews about their process in writing this over the last almost decade that it's taken them, and the process and how it really does sort of reflect Laszlo's sort of experience in creating something in America post-World War II. And just the fact that this film was shot with a budget under $10 million too, I can't believe it. Like, it feels monumental, and yeah, the fact that it was shot on such a low budget is really incredible.
Yeah, just seeing the epic scope that this film portrays on such a small budget is a triumph in itself.
No, they've talked a lot about directors using their budgets and putting all of it onto the screen, and there's almost no better example of a filmmaker that's doing that than Brady Corbet and Mona Fassfold. The score too is incredible. Daniel Blumberg, his second score that he's done for a film, the first being Mona's film The World to Come, and it's just this extremely propulsive industrial score that really develops in super emotional and unique ways. It's just a remarkable work for such a young artist too.
The Brutalist is now playing at Filmstreams. For KIOS, I'm Joshua LeBure.